Hey there, thanks for pressing play on this AHDB podcast. So, bit of news. Food and Farming and Agonomics have officially been retired. No more episodes coming. But wait, before you wander off into the podcast wilderness, we've got something new, shiny and weekly. It's called The Ag Show. It's got all the good stuff. Farming chats, fresh insights and a whole load of fun. New episodes drop every Wednesday at midday. Just search The Ag Show wherever you get your podcasts to give it a whirl.
Martin, I'm loving the new hair. You're going to have to tell me all about it.
Well, the secret, you see, is that it's all gone. Given that I gave myself a 2 out of 10 last week for combing my hair before speaking to our new chair, Emily Norton, I decided I didn't want to have the hassle of combing or brushing again. So it's all gone. And yes, I'm very much getting the vitamin D through the scalp as I prepare for holiday season.
Ooh, where are you going?
Mallorca.
I will expect a holiday present on your return.
Yes, on with the show.
Hello, I'm Tom Spencer.
I'm Hannah Clark.
I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Reese.
And welcome to your weekly dose of economics and analysis from the world of agriculture in this podcast we call Agonomics.
As we're over halfway through the year, I can't believe it. In this episode, we're joined by our AHDB colleague Grace Bolton to take us through the updated lamb market outlook.
The lambs coming through at the moment, the new season lambs, coming through later, coming through lighter and coming through in slightly fewer numbers. That is why supplies are tight at the moment, and that is what has taken the price up a bit now to keep it relatively flat throughout the year.
I've got some news on dairy usage in home, where consumption of yogurt is on the up.
And we'll also be answering this week's big question.
A reminder, new episodes of Agonomics drop at midday on Wednesdays. So follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to make sure you don't miss a show.
And do get in touch. Email us at agonomics@ahdb.org.uk.
So before we talk to our colleague Grace Bolton about the lamb outlook and what that might mean for the industry as we enter the second half of the year, it's time for a bit of news. So on the topic, as everyone seems to be talking about, the Royal Welsh Show, and I've got a lot of friends there enjoying themselves a bit too much. There's some big news to do with Welsh agriculture, as we've now had the 2026 update and description of the Welsh SFS, so Sustainable Farming Scheme. It's something that's been in the pipeline for quite a long time now, with several sort of changes to it. But it's now what we believe to be the sort of definitive article of what it's going to be. Now, it's quite different to what the English sort of SFI, so Sustainable Farming Incentive, is. You've got a list of tasks to complete to be added into the scheme. If you choose not to add into the scheme, you'll be remaining on the BPS, that basic payment scheme system, that will peter down until the year 2028. But for those that wish to be a part of it, there's a lot of key aspects to it, such as doing a carbon audit on farm to do with habitat creation and general recording of your on-farm assets and performance. So some big news there, something that we will be, I'm sure, covering with the AHDB in some articles in the coming weeks. So do watch this space. So, Hannah, what have you got from the world of agriculture in the news?
I was reading quite an interesting piece this week about internet access and rural connectivity. There's some findings been released from the NFU. They did a digital access survey, which showed that 21% of farmer respondents are still unable to access an internet speed of more than 10 megabytes per second, which, if anyone that uses the internet, will know that that's quite low. And that's compared to a national average of around 1% that can access that. So that's quite staggering, really. Their data also showed that just 33% of their respondents had access at all to fibre broadband. And the UK average is 57%. So these figures really show the issues around connectivity in the countryside and for farmers, being able to access the internet is vital for running of an effective, productive business. Not only that, there's also quite a big safety concern with that as well, and not being able to call emergency services, for example. In the NFU survey on phone use, only around 1/5 of the respondents said they can access a reliable mobile signal across their entire farm. And 10% of respondents have no 4G or 5G access. So having really good connectivity is not only important to run your farm, it's also important from a safety perspective as well. We've recently had Farm Safety Week across the UK, and that was run by the Farm Safety Foundation, or you might know them as providers of the big yellow wellies. You might see them at farm shows and such. So it's quite timely information from that point of view.
We all take internet access for granted. I mean, I work from home, and the thought of me not being able to get on the internet, well, I wouldn't be able to do my job. I wouldn't be able to do anything. I wouldn't be able to message my husband if there's something wrong with a dog, or, you know, anything simple like that. It's something that many of us do completely take for granted. So it is really concerning that the people that are responsible for producing our food might not be able to access information to help them do that effectively, let alone keep themselves safe. So really concerning that that is the case, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, Charlotte. What else have you found in the news this week?
I'm going to do a shameless plug for some of the work that the Retail and Consumer Insights team has done and recently released this week for my news section. So we've talked about in the past couple of weeks quite a lot about dairy, but I think it's because actually we've got an awful lot that has been happening in the world of consumers when it comes to dairy, particularly in home. So Kim Heath, who is our lead retail insight manager within the team, has recently released a report looking at yogurt's really positive performance for in-home usage and what some of the opportunities are for it and how it can actually push that a little bit harder. So when we think about yogurt, it has really been bucking the trend within dairy. So when we look at how consumers are using what they're purchasing in home, a lot of dairy has actually seen some declines. Now, when we think about that, people are more likely to be going out, eating out of home, making their coffees out of home, perhaps, but yogurt really bucking that trend. So we are seeing that 97% of all yogurt volumes sold are cows, and that 96% of all occasions for yogurt, so when it's being eaten, actually happen within the home. And when we look into some of the reasons why this is, it's because actually it's filling a lot of consumer needs at the moment. So there's a huge amount of variety that can come within the yogurt category. So if you think about it, you could go out, buy some Greek yogurt, do a little bit of baking with it if you fancied it, or make some overnight oats. You could go out and get kids-specific ones, so in the tubes, nice and easy for lunch boxes. Or you've got those different health options, haven't you? So thinking of your little yogurt drinks, or the ones that are claiming to have those additional proteins sort of added into them. So it just really fits a lot of the trends that we're seeing at the moment, and it really appeals to all ages. I don't know anyone that doesn't like yogurt.
I'm a yogurt person for breakfast, for sure. Yogurt with a bit of muesli, spot on.
It's got to be thick Greek style, like so thick you can stand your spoon up in it.
So some of the opportunities that we see for really increasing this demand for in-home usage is about actually how we can ensure that that added value of both eating and using yogurt in meals is really clear. So that can be around taste, that could be around the luxuriousness, like Hannah said, about having that really thick yogurt and how tasty that can be, but also around that versatility. So encouraging sort of thinking about what you can add to yogurt, whether it's a topping, whether it's having it for that breakfast, whether it's having it for that dessert. And also if we can educate some of the health benefits of yogurt. So it's vitamin content, protein, but also gut health. And that is definitely increasing in importance to consumers.
One of my favourite ways of using Greek yogurt is to make raitha that you have with curry. Do you know what goes well in curry? Lamb. That is a segue and a half. into our next section, which will be on the lamb outlook. But before we dive into that, I think it's time for a quick break.
Welcome back to the Agonomics podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you do have any questions on any of the news articles we've just talked about, or possibly on our next subject, please don't forget to email us agonomics@ahdb.org.uk. Now, welcome Grace Bolton. You're part of our livestock analysis team, and today we're talking about outlooks.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for having me. We report on outlooks for all livestock sectors. I'm primarily lamb. And the reason why we do report on outlooks is to give the industry, farmers, levy payers, so your farmers and processors, a picture of what might happen in the year ahead. So from this, we give estimates of production, estimated slaughter, and trade. So from these things, you can infer when will be best to hit your prime markets and what you can anticipate in terms of price for the year ahead, which is the most important thing on every farmer's mind.
Yeah, outlooks are a really key part of our services in market intelligence and the economics analysis team. And as Grace said, we produce them across the sectors that we cover. So beef, dairy, pork, cereals and oilseeds are the others. Grace, I know you've been heavily involved in the latest update for our lamb market outlook. What are you seeing in terms of key headlines?
So in this latest update, we've taken the previous 6 months' data and put them into our outlook model. It's been quite an interesting year in sheep so far. For the first 3 months of the year, estimated slaughter was down massively. And since April until June, now it has picked up. So year to June, we're looking at 5.6 million clean sheep slaughtered. So that is lambs. And we've also updated the numbers for the amount of adult sheep that have been slaughtered. So from the year to June, we're looking at down by 6% year on year. We also update carcass weights. These are numbers that we get from DEFRA. So we've seen a lot of heavier sheep come forward. And exports are currently up about 13% from Jan to May. And imports are currently up about 10%. So using all this data, we put it into the model. And from here, we can infer what's going to happen for the rest of the year. In terms of headlines, we're looking at improved production on 2024. So 274,000 tons is the new estimate for sheep meat. And we are looking at higher exports and higher imports.
The sheep sector has been quite interesting this year. And if you look at the price trajectory, that's a hard word to say, for clean lambs this year, it's bucked the trend, really, that you would typically see. Some of that is because last year was a little bit crazy in terms of the price, and we've covered it before, I think, in terms of those market dynamics coming together and spiking the price in the spring. Right now, we would typically see that kind of lamb price fall off a little bit now going into summer, but we haven't really seen that yet at time of recording. I wondered if we could explore the supply dynamics that we've seen this year, because I know we've sort of talked about that higher carryover and how that's come forward this year. So I just wondered what your thoughts were on that.
You are completely right, Hannah. We have seen higher carryover this year, which was weighing on the price mid-year. So during those key demand periods of Easter and Ramadan, that is when we saw the majority of that 2024 carryover come forward, a bit old, bit heavy, weighing on the price. We started off the year very, very high prices, which have now come down a bit and remained mostly flat. In terms of supply dynamics now, we are looking at fewer lambs coming through, so supplies are tight. The new season lambs that have come through now are coming through later. This is because of pushback lambing due to disease risks like we saw in 2024 when lots of farms were badly hit by Schmallenberg. So people have pushed back their lambing to hopefully avoid some of these factors. So the lambs coming through at the moment, the new season lambs coming through later, coming through lighter and coming through in slightly fewer numbers. That is why supplies are tight at the moment. And that is what has taken the price up a bit now to keep it relatively flat throughout the year.
I mean, will there also have been some sort of impact from the weather on this if they're coming through lighter? Just thinking, obviously, it's been such a warm year so far, hasn't it? I now have a hosepipe ban in Gloucestershire. What sort of impact might that have been having on the figures that we're seeing?
What we saw is general reports of quite a good lambing season this year, because it wasn't like 2024 when it was wet and cold and miserable. This year was broadly okay for a lot of the country. So we were seeing more lambs on the ground then. Since then, though, like I said, some places it just simply hasn't rained since spring. So there is a distinct lack of forage in these areas, which is making lambs harder to finish. As such, in this outlook, we've adjusted the seasonality of clean sheep slaughter for the second half of the year, pushing that back a bit, taking into account these longer finishing times and potentially putting them over into a 2026 carryover.
And I suppose if there is lack of forage, is that then going to be putting increased pressures on margins for farmers if they are then going to be having to preserve forage your hay or hard feed more than they would have been before? You know, what sort of impact do you think that might be having?
The impact on margin from having to supplementary feed is significant. A lot of farms at the moment don't really have much choice other than to supplementary feed if they want to get lambs gone as new season lambs when the premium's quite often a bit better. So that will be having a big impact. Also, we might be seeing a bit of a change of behaviours as lots and lots of farms, through necessity, carried over old season lambs into this year from last year. And then the price didn't rise in the same way it did in 2024, meaning that would have had a bit of an impact on profitability. So I would imagine people are trying to get lambs gone as soon as possible, which means chucking supplementary feed at them in lieu of forage. Most breeding decisions are made in the autumn. So when you put the ewes to the ram, that is when you kind of have your numbers outlined of this is how many ewes I've got to lamb. This is what I'm hoping the lambing percentage will be, and go from there. So the weather from now until September is crucial.
The other key element of the market is trade and international trade. Imports in particular.
Imports.
are quite a big topic. And I'm thinking Australia, New Zealand, they're our largest, well, New Zealand certainly is our largest supplier of imported sheep meat for various reasons. But Australia is coming up the ranks, isn't it? From a lower base. So I wondered what your thoughts were on the trade picture currently and where you think that might go and what kind of factors we might expect to see in the market.
Imports so far this year for the data we have, so that is January to May, have been up 10% on 2024. And that was already a very high year for imports due to poor production on our end. And like you said, the FTAs with Australia and New Zealand are having a big impact. So year to date, 2025, 59% of sheep meat imports have come from New Zealand, 26% have come from Australia. In 2024, this was 62% from New Zealand and 20% from Australia. So Australia is rising up the ranks, but is still a long way away from fulfilling its sheep meat quota. In the outlook for the rest of the year, we have put total imports up only incrementally from the last estimate. This brings total imports down by 5% year on year. So what we are expecting for the rest of the year, as our own domestic production kicks in late summer and autumn, to see these imports return back to more normal levels. We're also outside of our demand period now as well, so shouldn't be seeing the massive volumes coming through.
Have you got a split about what the cuts are that we had been importing, and has that changed at all?
I don't have it in front of me, but I do know that from both Australia and New Zealand, the primary cuts are things like legs of lamb. So it is those high value cuts that are coming in that the British consumer wants, and exporting the other potentially lower values that the British consumer doesn't want.
And of course, the final part of the market equation is consumers and consumer demand and what they're buying. Lamb performance has been quite variable, I would say, over the last couple of years. Last year was really strong. What are we expecting to see for the rest of this year, Charlotte?
Yeah, so I mean, I wrote an article at the tail end of last year, and it was painting a very positive picture for lamb, showing that consumers were shifting away from price and that focus. It was lamb was getting used in different ways at mealtimes. Retailers were really getting behind it and expanding ranges and offering those really strong promotions at key times of year, notably things like Easter and Christmas. Now, actually, when we come into this year, we had been hoping that it was going to be maintaining that momentum of really strong demand. But because of different things that have happened within that consumer climate, it is starting to ease somewhat. So we're anticipating that actually we are going to be looking at, for the rest of this year, a 7% decrease in demand on 2024. So unfortunate that that has really dropped off from where we were seeing at the heights of the end of last year. So it is that level of economic uncertainty that's really playing in. We are seeing consumer confidence falling. And the areas where we have been seeing that there is demand, you know, retailers are there still supporting with promotions. We're not seeing those off promotional purchases coming through. So it is that that consumer is starting to ease off somewhat. But we're also seeing, you know, it is a bit of a split picture. So lamb in retail is what's really driving this decline. And so far in 2025, we can see that lamb volumes have been down by 10%, whereas the out-of-home market has been flat. So it's that changing picture about perhaps consumers not looking to lamb for their in-home meals, but still looking to treat themselves when they are going out to enjoy a meal out.
And you mentioned about demand looking lower compared to last year, but last year we saw a lot of promotions and in-store activity that really drove that lamb consumption up, as well as the combination of timing of festivals and things like that in the spring. Can I ask what consumption is looking like compared to maybe 2 years ago or a couple of years ago when we didn't see quite such volatility?
Yeah, so if we look compared to 2023, we're anticipating that we are going to be down, so down by 2%. And it is just that that changing in confidence is really coming through. As you mentioned, we had the festivals coinciding. So Eid, Ramadan, that hit at the same time as Easter in 2024. This year, we had that slight staggering of that, so we weren't having that combination impact on that lamb demand. But we have seen that use of promotions has been increased this year. So when people are purchasing, there has been that increase in promotional purchases happening. The bit that's been that falling off perhaps has been on that non-promotional purchases. So people perhaps aren't reaching for lamb as that standard everyday purchase.
And of course, HDB does a lot of promotion and marketing for the red meats that we cover, lamb being a crucial one of those. So Love Lamb Week we have in September is a flagship marketing campaign. Charlotte, I know our analysis covers kind of the volume outlook, but also opportunities as well. And how can we, as an industry, maximise consumption of lamb?
Yeah, so we know from a number of our data providers and different sources that we look at and independent research which we conduct that lamb is seen as a really tasty protein. It's something that families and your kids or your partners, they're going to be pestering for to have it included within their meals, and that dishes are seen to be more tasty or more enjoyable when lamb is included within them. So it's all about how can we give that little bit of confidence to consumers to be inspired to cook tasty, easy to cook dishes that include lamb and make them that little bit more familiar with perhaps cooking with the protein. But it's also around, you know, how can we get the messaging right in store, online, on pack, as well as in food service for how lamb is a great source of protein, vitamin B12 and the other health benefits that lamb can offer, as well as making sure that its presence does remain. So we'd seen that great introduction of different ranges by retailers. That's been really important, particularly for keeping lamb on people's menus in home. But also, if you think about out of home, we want to make sure that lamb is kept on that menu. So it's there as that choice for consumers to be able to have.
So we've covered everything there, really, I think, for the lamb market. And if anyone would like to read more about the outlook, you can find it on our website. If you search AgriMarket Outlook, you will find all of our reports for our sectors that we cover there. So big thanks to Grace and Charlotte for taking us through that. Welcome back to Agonomics with myself, Hannah, Charlotte and Tom. And we're now at the exciting part of the episode where we find out what question we've been asked. Producer Martin, what do the people want to know?
Well, you see, I've heard farmers talk about milk-to-feed price ratio and wanted to know what it is and why is it important.
Great question.
Yeah, the dairy sector, they do love their stats. I'm sure the farming community will understand what I mean by that. But milk-to-feed price ratio, when we talk about that, we are comparing what the price of feed is, I mean, this is very much layman's terms, to what the price of milk is. Now, this is quite a key aspect of your bottom line, almost. If you are being efficient with your feed usage and producing milk at what is deemed a sort of acceptable level for your farm, keeping that feed price ratio at a point where you're still turning over a profit is really crucial. And something that is often out of control for a farmer, it's definitely an external factor in what they are charged for feed. Obviously, there are decisions that they can make on farm when it comes to how much feed they use. Also, the other external is how much is their milk contract going to pay. It's a very, very key statistic, isn't it? Isn't that right?
I think it's important to note as well, though, that figures are usually reported a couple of months in arrears, so it doesn't give an actual, does it? It's more an indication of what has been happening.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So when we report that, it's a sort of an average across the market, and it's very important for dairy farmers to be calculating that on their farm with the prices that they're receiving. And yeah, it's important to note that lots of different dairies have completely different systems in terms of how input intensive they are, whether they're feeding lots but getting potentially a higher output per cow. And that means that milk to feed price ratio is a good estimate at how to sort of compare your two farms in terms of what they're outputting, especially given that different processors will offer different prices depending on the milk they're producing, where they are in the country, and the demand at the time of year.
Definitely. And I think it's worth just signposting that if people have any more questions on this topic, we do produce data sets, which you can find on our website. And if you had any further questions on that, you can speak to our team.
The latest dairy market review you can find online for the last quarter, for quarter two. And that talks about milk production, what we're seeing in terms of output forecast. It talks about the milk to feed price ratio as well, and trends that we're seeing in the number of cows and the kind of calving systems that we're seeing as well.
So I think that's all we've got time for with the Agronomics podcast.
If you have any questions that you've been too afraid to ask, or indeed any topics you would like us to discuss on the podcast or get an expert in to talk about, please do get in touch with us on socials, or our email is agonomics@ahdb.org.uk.
And I think it just leaves us to say, Martin, have an amazing couple of weeks holiday. I think you deserve it.
And don't forget the sun cream.
Don't want to be burning my head. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye for now.